Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Whether you're tuning in on the radio dial in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we welcome you. Also, those joining us online through our affiliates around the world, we're glad to have all of you with us as well. Lydia King is with us today to talk to us not only about her love of writing, but also what it's been like for her to share her stories with the world and to be able to see the response. Her newest book is called A Beautiful Poison. I had a chance to read this particular book. We're going to talk about what it's been like for her to see the early response to it, but also what it's been like for her to bring these characters to life, and of course what she hopes we're able to do as we're taking the journey along with her. Now, if you're just hearing about Lydia's new book, we'll tell you at the end of the segment how you can get it for yourself. But Lydia, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, the pleasure is definitely all mine, Lydia. As I said, we're going to talk about A Beautiful Poison a little bit later and remind our audience how they can get it. But, Lydia, what has it been like for you as a storyteller to not only to create these stories and these what-if situations, but to be able to see the way that readers are responding to it?
You know, it's been pretty fantastic. I think that when you begin writing a book and start conceiving in your mind about what you hope it to be, there's this huge, long journey that happens before it actually gets into the hands of readers. And right when that happens, you are really crossing your fingers and hoping that you did the story justice that you'd really hoped for to achieve. So in the beginning, it was really nerve-wracking because it's my first historical fiction, and I really wanted to make sure I did a good job with the authenticity of the facts. So that was maybe one of the things I was most worried about, and was very relieved to see that people thought I did a good job with the history.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that, Lydia, because I think one of the things that comes across in A Beautiful Poison is the fact that regardless of where it's set, the situations that Aline, I think it's pronounced, and the other characters mm-hmm. are able to go through are things that we can all kind of relate to. Do you think that is part of the connective tissue that readers feel, that even though they may not can relate necessarily to the time period, the situations that the characters go through are very easy for us to relate to?
Yes, I think so. And it was a really interesting juxtaposition for readers who did not really have to deal with a lot of the issues that the time period kind of forced upon these three characters, some of the class issues, some of the marriage issues, being in the middle of a war. And yet, at the same time, it was oddly familiar because class issues haven't gone away and sexism hasn't
right.
gone away. And so much of that didn't really go away, so that was very familiar, I think, to readers. But
right.
I think many of them also felt the frustration of seeing Aline loving things like chemistry but being told over and over again, this is a very unwomanly thing to do, you can't do it. And I think that frustration really helped readers cheer for her in a lot of ways. So that's
yeah.
an example of how, you know, you get these sort of two different oddly things occurring, you know, with the situation of the book versus what the readers deal with today.
For sure. I think that's so true, and that's a really good point for us to remember. So take us back a little bit, Lydia. When did you first realize the gift of storytelling for yourself?
Oh, my goodness. I would say it was very recent for me. I'm in my mid-40s, and when I was a child, I read incessantly, and I didn't really try to write very much. It kind of didn't occur to me, even though there were times where on long car rides I would have these dialogues in my head, but I didn't do anything about it. And by the time I got to high school and college, it was really clear that what I was very good at was things like math and science. And there were people around me who were really talented at writing, seemingly effortlessly talented at writing. And I remember thinking, well, that's not me. So it wasn't until much later, it was actually after medical school, after I went to through residency, and after I became a physician in New York, that I decided to try to write again, because it took a long time for me to give myself permission to do so. And when I did, it was just this huge world opened up, and I loved it so much, and I kind of regret that I hadn't given myself the chance earlier, or I'd at least listened to the voices around me that told me, you shouldn't do this, and you're not good at it, so that's a sign. You should do something else instead. So it was late in coming for me. I probably started writing when I was about 38 years old, something like that. So it's kind of a second career down the line.
Gotcha.
For me.
I wanted to bring that up for our audience, Lydia, because one of the things I did when I was prepping for your segment, for one, to make sure I was pronouncing your last name correctly, is I was watching some video interviews that you had done, and one of the things that you have done was like a small PSA for Glitter Magazine for their self-love campaign, and you talked about, and you even showed in that video, if you remember, your friends, the books. And so I was curious about, it's obvious that you've had a love of reading and love of books for some time. I was curious about that journey of being able to, as you said, to give yourself permission. Do you think, though, now looking at it, that it was, regardless of when you decided to do it, that it was a natural thing for you at some point, because of your love of stories, to become a storyteller yourself eventually?
You know what? It really was a lot of different circumstances that made it happen. It's so hard to go back in time and wonder, well, if this had been a little different, would I have still done it? I really wanted to do it, but I was very much stuck in this mindset of, I don't know how. And I think a lot of readers do this. We read J.K. Rowling, and we're just completely entranced with this Harry Potter universe, or, you know, we're reading Neil Gaiman. We just can't even conceive of how, you know, he creates these amazing stories. And I was stuck in that, I don't know how, I can't even imagine how. And with the support of some local writers and authors, after joining a workshop, there was this one day I was sitting on my deck trying to imagine what kind of story would I write? If I was going to write some interesting urban fantasy, what would be the crux of that story? And I started talking out loud with my husband, who's also a physician, and we just kind of hashed out this vague idea. And from that came a couple of sentences of where the story might go, and from that came an outline, and then I just started writing it, and I didn't know what I was doing. I did not have a degree in creative writing, and I think just what I needed was encouragement. I think if I had gotten a lot of people telling me, this isn't for you, or this isn't good, or... the allowance to do that. So that support made a huge difference for me. And that's what took my childhood love of stories and, you know, maybe someday I could actually write this, or to actually doing it, in that I just gave it a try. And then from there, I started investigating, well, how can I do this better? Because I'm doing something, but it's probably not very good. And I started looking everything up online that I possibly could about writing craft. I started seeking out other writers for advice. And I kept my heart and my mind very open to feedback. That was maybe one of the largest, biggest steps that I did that I think was enormously helpful. I did not write something and assume it was perfect and the world needs to throw money at me because of my, you know, brilliance. I knew it was bad in the beginning, but I was so eager to make it better. And when someone said, hey, this is the ending of this chapter is just not that great. And I would say, all right, good to know. I'll try better next time, instead of, you know, questioning that person and saying, well, you don't know what you're talking about. And I was very humble about knowing that I didn't know a lot in the beginning.
And I think that definitely serves you well. It's funny you mentioned that, because when we look at the characters that you give us in The Beautiful Poison, Lydia, these are characters that really are able to play off of each other, able to talk to each other candidly. When you're talking about, you know, Elaine, as I mentioned earlier, Birdie and Jasper, I mean, there was that one scene that you wrote, I mean, where Jasper was able to kind of see the various degrees I'll say, of Aileen, and, you know, where he had this thought of who was this woman. You know, she was able to kind of to show more than what people would expect. I think there's a big lesson in that for us. And again, going to what we can learn sometimes from historic fiction and history in general is that, you know, what we see by someone or what we expect from someone is not always all that they are. I mean, do you think that is something that is definitely true of these characters and even of all of us, that there are more layers to us than sometimes people give us credit for?
I think absolutely true, and I think that's what makes for a story that's worth turning the page on. You know, you get an introduction to a character early on, and immediately, just like we make our assumptions about what people look like or what kind of life they must lead by just visuals, it's just a surface thing, and it takes pages and pages to be able to see beneath that and realize that there is more beauty to some of these characters than you might first realize. There is a lot of ugliness sometimes that is down deep there, and that's a reflection on what is what real life is like when you meet people, is that people are complicated and they are not one-dimensional, and they have their good moments and their bad moments. And when in a crisis, you know, how they react says so much about what kind of person they are. And I think that is it's true for real life people as well as fictional characters.
Yeah. You know, this book definitely had its darker moments in it for sure. I was curious for you, I mean, because it's obvious a lot of work went into this, Lydia, not just with taking us back in time, but also the language. I mean, how much of a challenge was that to get those, you know, swimmingly is not something I hear a whole lot these days. Of course, I live in Mississippi, so it's a lot of things I don't hear. but what was it like for you to kind of capture the language of these characters?
It was a huge challenge for me. I wanted to make sure that I did it right. It's funny that you mentioned swimmingly, because that's one of my favorite words that I've liked since, like, graduate school. And I can't remember who said it to me first, but I remember thinking, I just love that word. And, you know, using a word like that, you have to be able to check that you're doing the right thing in putting it in the book. Sometimes I would put something in there. Like, for instance, saying okay. Okay is not a word that existed in our language, you know, several hundred years ago. And you got to find out when that word showed up and is it okay to use, which is what I just did. So I had several different techniques to help me with the language. One was I read some books that came out around the time and were contemporary with that time. And so Hemingway and Fitzgerald were two authors that I went to make sure that the language was on par with what I was doing. The second thing that I did was I read diaries. And so Hemingway has a great diary that is just full of letters. I guess it's not a diary. It's just a book full of all of his correspondence. And there was so much wonderful slang in that was really helpful. And I would just highlight this and make these huge lists of words that were appropriate for the time period. And then my secret weapon was the Google Ngram viewer. So that's Ngram. It is this fantastic wealth of information that catalogs what words were used during what periods of time. And I think it starts in 1700. So you can type in a word like basketball, and it will tell you, it'll show you on a graph when the word first was used in print in the English language in the Western world, and when it reaches its peak, and whether or not it was actually used in 1800 or not, or something like that. So anytime I came across a word I wasn't sure I was confident about, I would just plug it into this fantastic resource, and it would tell me whether or not the word even existed at the time in print, which is a reflection on, you know, language. Not perfect, but pretty close. So I had a lot of different tricks up my sleeve, but it did take a lot of background reading for me to get familiar with the time period. I also had some people who were comfortable with writing in the 1918 period or just at the end of the Gilded Age, and I had them take a read through my manuscript to make sure that I was doing a decent job.
Yeah, You know, I'll talk around these next couple of questions, Lydia, even though I would love to know. But since other people are listening, I will, and they may not have read the book yet, I will
okay.
I will try to be kind to them. The dynamics, I'll put it that way instead of saying the word I want to use, the dynamics between Aline and Jasper, did you go into the book knowing that they would exist the way that they did and evolved, or was that something that was a surprise to you as well?
Some of it was a surprise and some of it was not. When I had the idea of the three characters, when they first popped into my head, I didn't have a plot. I just knew there was going to be this debutante-like character, Aline, and she would have a lot of things just handed to her in life. I knew that Birdie was going to be a character and she was going to be ethereal and beautiful and like a fairy on earth kind of character, but that there was something broken about her. I didn't know what it was. And I knew Jasper was going to be this other glue that held them together. He would find them both entrancing, but for different reasons. They would have a relationship with each other that held on individually between the characters, but also as this triad of friends that would be a little complicated. So I knew that was going to be there, and when I first had the idea, I wrote to a friend of mine, and I said, I've got a character, and I've got a time period, and it's going to have these things in it, but I have no idea what's going to happen. And I remember she said, okay, sounds good. You got to get a plot, though, because they can't just sit around and stare at each other all day. I mean, something's got to happen.
Right.
So it took a while for the rest of the story to play itself out, but the three characters are really what came to me originally, once I kind of set the stage for, I knew it was going to be in 1918.
Gotcha.
Well,
I think, you know, the love of a mystery is something that captures the reader. It definitely captures the three characters. Of course, the mystery, you know, is literally close to home for all three of them. And none of them are immune from the things that you kind of take them through, and even the experience that they're even looking into. Lydia, I think there's a big point in that for us that, you know, sometimes no matter how quote-unquote good we think we are, like you mentioned Birdie, and a lot happens around Birdie that we're able to see in the book, that we're not immune to life, we're not immune to, you know, to the past, and we're not immune to the actions of others, you know, regardless of what, you know, what we might see as our own role in it as well. You know, did you mind any having to put them through the things that they had to go through?
No, I'm kind of mean that way. I just, you know, when you talk to authors enough, we sort of console each other over being just really cruel to our characters because we just put them through the ringer. We don't hold anything back. And if you're holding something back, then, you know, it's not like we're purposely trying to be super, you know, torturous with them. But you know, if something bad can happen, it probably should in the story in a lot of cases, not all cases. But for me, I think one of the even playing grounds, just evening out the playing field, was the influenza epidemic. So the war touches them in all different ways, in some ways a lot worse than others, especially with Jasper. But the influenza epidemic was this tidal wave that rolled in, and it didn't really care how wealthy you were, how beautiful you were, how clever you were. It affected you. It killed you, either you off or your loved ones. People around you were falling in, you know, droves. So that was one of the ways that I kind of democratically let the characters know that as much control as they thought they had, they didn't really have anything, any control over certain circumstances. You know, that's life, unfortunately, just sort of slapping you backhanded across the face when you think you may have an idea of what's going on. So it was mean, but necessary.
Yeah, necessary for sure. And it definitely gives us something to think about. Now, I'm going to ask you this question. You may not can tell us, and that's fine, but I think I have to ask because that's what's expected of me to do with this job. Is did you go into this book, Lydia, thinking this was it? Or did you think to yourself that one or more of these characters may have a life of their own outside of this book?
You mean like after the book is over kind of thing? Or?
Right. Did you feel as though, well, I was trying to keep from asking you, is there going to be another book? Is there going to be a sequel?
There is probably, I've had some requests for a sequel. They would like to see what happens afterwards. They would like to see some more sleuthing going on. At this point in time, I do not have a second book ready to go in my head. I am writing a follow-up book that is not related to the characters or the time period. That's actually set about 70 years earlier, in about 1850, 1851. So it's another historical mystery, but no, it does not. The one thing that maybe is a common thread between the two books is Bellevue Hospital. So Bellevue Hospital will be in there, and this sort of medical forensics thread will be there as well. I can't seem to leave that one alone. But no, not right now. I don't have a sequel. A Beautiful Poison 2 is not happening at this point in time.
Got you. Well, yeah, I didn't want to just come out and ask, but I figured, hey, you know, it's, you know, we, one thing about readers, we, you know, we have this, we feel as though we're just supposed to know these things. And so it's you know, it's so, like you said, there have been requests, but at this time there's no plans. And so, you know, who knows? We never know who might show themselves somewhere. So we'll just put a ... for that. Again, everyone, Lydia Kang has been our guest. Great conversation with you, Lydia. The book is A Beautiful Poison. It's out now through our friends at Amazon.com, or you can get it, of course, through your favorite bookstore if they don't have it. They'll be more than happy to order it for you. Again, it's published by Lake Union Publishing. And Lydia, how can our audience stay connected with you and kind of keep up with all the great things going on with you?
Well, on my website, lydiakang.com, there's an option for a newsletter, and I do that a couple times a year. I do a lot of book giveaways in my newsletters, and those are all updated with events that are coming up as well as book news. I am also on Twitter at Lydia Y. Kang. And I'm also on Instagram, Lydia Kang. Instagram's probably my favorite social media because it's just a lot of fun for me. But I'm around, so absolutely reach out on my website. You can send me an email if you have a question about the book or if I'm going to be in your town anytime soon. I'd be happy to talk with readers.
All right, so make sure you all are staying connected with Lydia for sure. Lydia, congratulations to you again. Thank you so much for the time, and looking forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you so much for having me. I had fun today. Thanks.
Well, good. The pleasure is definitely all mine. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.